Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So here we are with an opportunity to give you some analysis, commentary, and if we're lucky, a little insight into the media issues of the week. Dr. Alan Shartok is here.
How'd you do?
CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor of communication emeritus, and political scientist. Stu Shinsky is here. Sir.
How are you?
Editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Good to see you, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
So happy that you've motored up, as they say in the Midwest, motored up here.
Motored.
Nice to see the sunrise over the New York State Thruway.
Absolutely. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union here in Albany, New York, where this program originates, for those of you around the country who are hearing us at 3 a.m. and the other times when, you know, radio stations play this prime time, we like to think, for radio listeners. We first have to guess. Now, Dr. Shartok, since you don't like to prepare for this program.
You may call me Alan.
Thank you. Thank you. Alan, what do you think is the most influential publication of our era?
The most influential publication of our era, without question, is the New York Times.
Aha. Well, Stu, you've seen the article that raises a question.
Well, it's apparently High Times Magazine.
Jason Fagone in The New Republic writes a piece that suggests that High Times Magazine has quite an impact because, after all, we are moving toward marijuana legalization in different parts of the country. And who would have thunk that back when High Times Magazine first began?
Well, wait a second. There's a logical problem here.
Uh-oh.
Just because these guys are advocates doesn't mean they're the ones who are the change agents.
Aha.
That's spoken in his best academic keys.
Correlation not being the same as causation, you
PhDs
would say.
Yes, that's correct.
Or were they just ahead of the curve? The story seems to be here is that, you know, High Times Magazine, which was once a very niche publication for a very small target audience.
Is that how you say it, niche? I always say niche.
Niche, that
too. No, it's not really French. It is niche.
Mm-hmm. It's niche?
It's niche.
But I always referred to my brother's daughter as my niche.
Yeah, well, you pretended it was your niche.
Or your nephew. But it's apparently with the more liberal attitudes toward drug use and some of the controversies over sentences and its legalization of marijuana, it's much more out there now.
Well, it may be out there, but it is not the most influential.
Well, the New Yorker said it is.
But it's quite interesting. You know, when you think about niche publications, though, think about these things about
Wait, he just lied. He said the New Yorker said it was. You'd said the New Republic said it was.
It's actually, I was reading a New Republic article about the New Yorker article.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I believe
you. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Right, you didn't lie after all.
Not this time.
You know, the fact is, when we believe that a lot of our media future now rests in niche publications, we have a magazine, you probably produce magazines,
several.
At the Poughkeepsie Journal, and we have these seven different titles that all speak to an interest in weddings, health, women's business. I don't know, what are some other great
we
niches?
We do wellness, cuisine are our biggest.
Cuisine, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and they do very, very well.
See, but you have to know your market. I mean, cuisine would do well in your relatively affluent communities there.
Mm-hmm. That's cuisine being food.
That would be the French word for yes,
for
kitchen.
For, yes, for
we like
dinner.
I like it when people say, "Well, I like Italian cuisine," and I think, "Oh, come on, that would be cucina." But anyway,
I grew up thinking cuisine was something that came from your nose.
Oh, dear. This is The Media Project. You can be a part of it by writing media at wamc.org. Alan Chartok and Stu Shinsky and Rex Smith here. All right, so we've dealt with that topic already.
So we have.
What about those publications that are trying to become niche, you might say? That is the newspapers in various cities served by Advance Publications, which is the Newhouse family, which also owns the Condé Nast magazine empire. And I'm talking about Mobile, Alabama, Birmingham, New Orleans, Syracuse, New York, Harrisburg, PA, places where the formula for Cleveland, Portland, Oregon even, formula for these is to reduce the frequency of publication and to focus on the digital. It's been a year now in New Orleans that this has been going on.
And, I was just there.
You were.
My
did you find
wedding.
The newspaper?
I saw it in a box on a corner.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if you go to a newsstand in New Orleans, you will find the Times-Picayune, the storied, once terrific newspaper of that community. And right alongside it, you'll see something labeled The Advocate, which is actually from Lafayette, was it, where it originates, Lafayette, Louisiana. But
nature abhors the vacuum, is your point.
It is. And other publications have been coming in. I am struck by the fact that these newspapers, if you want to just look at it from a business standpoint, are leaving money on the table.
Exactly.
Because they are walking away from days of the week. And I think there's a damage to the brand that comes if you lose the frequency of print publication when people still want it.
And you break the habit of readers picking you up every day or knowing that you would be there for them every day if you're only printing a few days a week.
Neither of you probably remember, I'm the executive publisher of a newspaper, the Legislative Gazette. And one day, a guy who was working there writes a note to me and says, Alan, you're the only one who knows how to sell for this newspaper. Mm-hmm. I'm sell ads for this newspaper. And I go to my executive vice president at New Pulse at the time. This is what he said. He said, quote, it sounds like a letter of resignation to me. The point being that when these guys only do a couple of days a week, it sounds like they're resigning as opposed to doing what they have to do, which is to sell the newspaper and to do it well.
Well, their strategy is they're looking to save money and make the leap to digital. But yes, Rex said it well. You're leaving money on the table. We've had people ask us at the Poughkeepsie Journal, and for those of you not in the New York area, we're about a 30,000 daily newspaper in New York's Hudson River Valley. We've had people call us and say, please, don't do what other newspapers are doing. Please continue to publish, and we will continue to do that because people need a trusted source for news. And that's, I mean, what happened in New Orleans is a perfect example because the Times-Picayune pulled back, and then competition came right in, and they're doing well, that competition.
And the most interesting thing about New Orleans was it became a political football. It's like fracking in New York State. People got mad that they had done this, and there was a huge reaction.
Absolutely. And by the way, to correct myself, it's Baton Rouge where The Advocate originated, not Lafayette. But, you know, interesting point that you just made when you cited your circulation, because we are no longer just print only, circulation does, though, tell only part of the story.
Right. I mean,
you have, you're behind a paywall, aren't you?
We are behind a paywall. We have a full content subscription model, Rex. When you pay for it, you get it all on our apps, our website, our electronic replica edition.
When you pay for it all, meaning pay for the...
You pay for the content in any way you'd like to access it.
Well, but do you get newspaper for the same price?
It is part of the subscription.
Yes.
You do get that. And you can choose the number of days of week that it's delivered to your home.
Right. So
online, we get a million visits a month.
So how much does it cost?
There's different plans, different frequency and different levels of access. You can get the Sunday paper and full digital access for $12 a month.
Wow, that's terrific. And how about your paper?
Well, we have a different model right now. I mean, a million visits a month is what we get in a day.
Right.
And so different situation, a different model. I shouldn't say it. No, we have about 150,000 unique visitors per day. That translates to, say, 40 million page views a month. So that is a different model, and I don't know if it's sustainable. You know, I mean, there are these different models out there. If you give away online, what we're trying to do now, as a matter of fact, is if you look at timesunion.com, it is a very different product from the print paper, and sometimes people are mad about that because they have come to expect over the years, well, I can get online just what I get in print. Well,
that's right. By the way, I have it on my phone. And at night when I look at the New York Times and get everything, I sometimes press on the Times Union and don't get the story I was looking for.
That's right. You have to pay to get
you
the story you
tease
want.
You. You're nothing but a
you
tease.
You can get what Stuart's talking about. You can get a facsimile edition, that is the e-edition, or you can get the iPhone app or the iPad app if you like.
Well, how much?
Well, a little bit extra, but I think that a lot of people are moving toward the model you're talking about, where there's basically an all areas pass, but it's not free. And a lot of papers are going with a different free website. That's for what, for example, our company's papers in Houston and San Antonio are doing. You get a free website that's different from all the content that you have to pay for.
Really. Boston and Philadelphia does that as well.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's so fascinating to me is out comes the New York Times every morning. There it is, headlines. But by that time that it comes out, you can go onto the New York Times website and find entirely different lead stories by 8 o'clock in the morning.
Because the newspaper is old by that point. The next morning is first.
But you're a subscriber. And the Times now.
No, I am a subscriber.
Yeah, and so that's why you get access to everything on the Times website.
Yes, but I am still talking, Rex, about the difference between, I mean, I'm trying to get it in my head, and I'm sure everybody who's listening is nodding about this, and that is... nodding off about this, you get the newspaper, even though a lot of people like to hold the thing in their hands and all the rest of it, is really not the latest news.
Yeah, no way, no way. And so if you want to continue to have a bargain with what is print in your hands, you have to give people something different. You have to give them something of value, because old folks like us, and there's a great range between young Stu here and you, but still, we are in a generation that really likes the printed word, and we like to hold it. And that,
we do.
We can't rely upon that going forward.
Yeah, the print edition is becoming more analytical, more deeper perspective, and more voices, perhaps, that not only tell you what's happening, but illuminates the context.
Well, it's nice of you to say that, but still, I want to come back to my New York Times in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's very different from the e-edition, because it's an analytical, it just can't keep up.
You got to run that press sometime.
Yeah, well, certainly. There comes a point, but some people like to have that print
product.
Well,
I do. I feel about my newspapers the way I do about my wife.
Oh, boy. I hope that Roselle is not listening at this moment, because comparing your wife to a pile of crushed trees is not a good thing.
On the contrary, I just meant...
That's been a longer subscription, I would imagine.
A longer subscription, that's
43
right.
years. I want to explain... All I meant was I like to hold them both.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing. What an artful exit that was from a very difficult situation. Very impressive. But to the credit, just to give to the other side, Jim Amos, the very...
Did you say Amos?
Amos, A-M-O-S-S. He's a really smart Amos. Editor
okay, gotcha.
Of New Orleans, what was the Times-Picayune, is still, but... He says that their website now is that it has the same fundamental commitment to investigative reporting, that he has almost the same size staff, that he doesn't think that they've missed a beat. He details the investigative reporting that NOLA.com, that's what they
sure.
call it, has done. And he says that you can judge our performance, and they're very proud of it. I would say, looking at some of the other, I look more closely at Syracuse, which is nearer to us. It doesn't seem to me that represents the same commitment to great journalism that the seven-day-a-week newspaper used to have. I think they are dropping some things.
But to be fair, Rex, the seven-day-a-week newspaper doesn't represent the same commitment to journalism that it used to represent, because you don't have as many reporters and the rest of it. So it's a little bit of an inadequate comparison.
Any way you cut it, there just isn't as much revenue, because there are more places for those advertising dollars to go, which is what used to be 80% of the revenue of newspapers used to come from advertising in the paper. And those dollars can go to many, many other places.
Okay,
now.
But I want to say one more thing.
Okay.
And that
he's
is,
holding
I'm,
up in
I'm
front
holding
of the microphone.
Up my five.
Look closely at your radio, folks. You'll see his iPhone 5.
Okay, iPhone 5.
Yep.
Once the iPhone or its like becomes universal, then who needs a newspaper? Think about that. I mean, you know, there's the New York Times app right there. There's the Times Union app right there. I'm going to get the Poughkeepsie Journal app right there. And
mobile is significant, and it is getting ever more important. Just in 2010, only 18% of smartphone users said they would get news from it. Last year, it was more than 40% of men, 30-some percent of women. I think this year it will surpass. More than half of iPhone users will say, I get news from my smartphone. And as those things get more sophisticated, actually, I was touring recently.
The
site of the Nanotechnology Center, the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering in Albany.
Which is big stuff for those of you who are in Los Angeles or Austin, where we robbed it from.
Exactly. And they say that the smartphone is driving all the growth of technology on the creation of microprocessors, that in what used to be video games used to be the driving force. Now it is the smartphone. And so we have to really be there. We, as we speak here today, yesterday, we introduced a new platform for our mobile devices, which is much more visual. And we think that it will last for a couple of years, and then we'll have to change it again. But we really think that mobile is where it's at.
It is. I mean, the media industry in the late 90s absolutely screwed up the internet. They blew it. They totally missed the potential of the internet.
Isn't that the way it always is?
Often, yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. The CIA, did it know that the wall was coming down, you know, in the old Soviet Union? They didn't.
A slightly different example.
But we're putting a lot of money into it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Do you think that the Times is doing something right now? The New York Times has introduced the New York Times Minute, a video news update a day. On every minute that they do, what, three little stories?
We've been doing it for a year.
Is that right?
Well, we do it once a day. We're not the New York Times. But one of the reasons that newspapers haven't shifted as fast as they honestly should have is because they have not gauged what their readers wanted really well. And the rise of the smartphone, newspapers have been behind it. They've been behind digital news. They have been slow to introduce apps in many cases. So that the fact the Times is introducing a video minute, about 10 years after YouTube came about, which has how many billions of views a day? I think the New York Times, for all of their august coverage and innovation, they're a little behind on this one.
But it's expensive. It's expensive to produce, and the page views, as you know, the page views that you get from the video you put up have not in the past matched the expense of putting it in. It is a limited return on investment. The investment that you make in that would have to be betting on the come. You've got an eye to the future of drawing an audience that wants the video.
We have an iPhone and a staffer, and we have an app, the movie app, and it takes about 40 minutes to produce a one-minute newscast in our newsroom at a cost of roughly whatever, 3/4 of an hour of that staffer's labor time.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I know. That is interesting, and it also says something about the differences, I think, between public radio and some newspapers. And that is, when you sit down and you configure and you say, okay, we're going to do this, this is going to be the cost. Mm-hmm. More. And then you say it gets expensive, which you just said. Now, here comes WAMC, which we're broadcasting from right now. And we look around for the person who is most likely to accept a new burden. And we say to them, you do it. And they do it. I think that's your point, Stu. Yes. I mean, you know, if you can load it onto somebody else, you do it.
We've been doing this, and we're getting about 25,000-30,000 video views a month off of this. For our size operation, we're pretty happy with that. And it's going to only grow. You got to start somewhere.
Well, put a little porno on, and you can be sure you're going to have a big audience.
That is the problem. That's the primary use of the internet. But if we could fill page views, when we talk about what great page views we get, the reason that we look at that number is because that's the way advertisers buy. They buy based upon clicks, basically. Mm-hmm. If you could convince an advertiser to buy based upon engagement rather than on just how many clicks you get, then I think we could put great journalism online. And I think that will happen, you know, as the internet matures. But the problem is, right now, you have to give, if your metric is page views, then you have to give people a certain amount of fluff. You have to give them the Miss Universe swimsuit contest or something like that to get the page views. Or in our case, what we do is we go to local events and do just miles and miles of photographs, scene galleries, we call them, S-E-E-N. And people love that. They click through and they'll look at 150 pictures. Well, you don't go to those events.
No. I mean, saying, where am I?
Oh, where am I?
I want to see. But I want to ask you guys something about
you. I just want to know why we didn't have you in
speaking,
there more.
Speaking of tricksters. Yeah. Speaking of tricksters, I want to ask you guys a question. Mm-hmm. And that is that when I'm reading my newspapers, let's not use any names because I hate lawsuits. But you pretty well know what I read. And I'm reading a news story and all of a sudden pops an ad.
Yeah.
Now, in the middle of reading it. Now, in the old days, it was only sort of on entry and still there to some degree. But I don't know how those get there. I didn't touch anything. But all of a sudden, there's the ad sort of popping up in the middle of my reading. It's very disturbing. Now, that's why I call you guys tricksters, because I don't know whether you all do it, but it just seems to me you're always having to assure the advertisers one way or the other you're going to get them up there.
So we can afford the reporting staff that enables the TV stations to take our content and have news for their broadcast, you know? If we didn't have advertising like that, we couldn't afford to hire the reporters who are the assignment editors, in effect, for the local TV stations.
I see. Well, that explains it.
It used to be heresy to have an ad on page one of a newspaper.
Yeah.
Now it's commonplace.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio, you can comment at media@wamc.org. We would welcome your thoughts, or you can write to 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206, I think, is where WAMC is located. Alan Shartok is here, Stu Shinsky, editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. So here is a question, and it is about how, this is one of Alan's favorite topics, it's headline writing. And I have to say, our producer, David Gustina, pulled this for us, looking at the difference between headlines, between a headline that the Associated Press put on its own story and the headline that the Times Union put on the story over the same information.
Yes.
The information was a Siena Research Institute poll. The headline that the Associated Press put on it was poll, colon, Cuomo dips to lowest job performance rating. The headline of the Times Union was Cuomo still getting high marks. You know?
Both, and they were both right.
They're both right.
It's interesting because his job performance rating, I believe, did dip.
Did dip.
Significantly. He went below the 50% mark. And the other thing, the Times Union, his personal popularity is still very, very high.
Yes. He has a 2-to-1 favorability rating. 61% rate him favorably. And he would crush any opponent that they come up against.
So at this time, so would have Mario Cuomo crushed George Pataki.
Right.
Who was a who-he candidate, but...
More comparable would be the second run, Mario Cuomo versus Andy O'Rourke, the Westchester County Executive, don't you think? Yeah. And that they're now talking about running a Westchester County Executive now, Rob Astorino, against...
And nobody knows who he is yet, except outside of Westchester
but
County.
But he's raising money nationally, and he's got a newspaper columnist at a New York City tabloid saying that he's a potential 2016 presidential candidate. The guy's the Westchester County executive. So it goes. It's interesting what happens when
you say anything, and most people
can say anything in the New York Post,
and most people forget what you said. I mean, you know, we're now hearing that our United States senator, our junior senator from New York, that she is presidential fodder too.
But she's only 44 years old, so she could
Kirsten
be for
Gilbert.
The next 24 years. Yeah,
thank you for that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Very interesting. So who knows? Anyway, just thought that Alan often likes to talk about headlines being reflective of biases.
But who writes the headlines in your newspaper, Stu?
We have a production team who handles that.
What does that mean, a production team?
People who copy edit the stories, people who write the headlines, they write the photo captions. That's what they do.
Yeah, but they screw things up, and they put misleading headlines on things. All of you, your people do. I don't like it at all. And then when somebody calls me up to say, I read your column, and I didn't like the headline, I say, I didn't write it, and they all look at you as if you're crazy.
Well, one of the new things in journalism, talking about the change, is that for web stories, at least in our newsroom, reporters do write the headlines on their stories.
We're doing that same thing. Yeah. And we're having training on how to write for the web is different. You write a different kind of headline.
How is it different, very quickly?
Well, you're trying to get web traffic, so you write it for
search engine optimization.
Search engine optimized. There's the word, SEO. Yes. Yep, you write a headline that the search engines will like.
Keywords at the beginning. So what would people search for to look for a particular story?
That is fascinating. We finally got something done on this show.
So the headline, for example, the Times Union headline we just cited would be more SEO, even though this was a print headline. Cuomo still getting high marks. Probably Cuomo would be the word that people would search for this under.
Right. You have to think like the reader and then sort of position the search to get what they would want to find with their search.
That is fascinating. I've learned something today. That, as you all know, is almost impossible.
We don't have PhDs, Stu and I, so you know we do the best we can.
So we'll avoid search engine monetization, which is a whole different topic.
Ooh, but we love it.
Very quickly, what does it mean?
It means making money off of that search.
So in other words, you want to make the most money off of a headline?
No.
Slightly different.
It's like our advertising people now sell SEO. They can sell to a business. We will help you to get your business higher in the search rankings for Google or
interesting.
Or so
sure. This has always been a big issue for many years now.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a new line of revenue for us, kind of a far field from what we do, some might say. But hey, we'll take it. So we've reached the end of our half hour, amazingly enough.
Yeah, Ray Graff is in the other room, and he's making faces
so this
at
is
us.
Meaning that you guys are needed in the next show.
Yeah.
So we hope you're going to join us again next week for The Media Project.
I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city.